If you heal your pain by your own effort, you receive no moral credit. Your code regards it scornfully as an act of self-interest. Whatever value you seek to acquire, be it wealth or food or love or rights, if you acquire it by means of your virtue, your code does not regard it as a moral acquisition. You occasion no loss to anyone. It is a trade, not alms, a payment, not a sacrifice. The deserved belongs in the selfish commercial realm of mutual profit. It is only the undeserved that calls for that moral transaction which consists of profit to one at the price of disaster to the other. To demand rewards for your virtue is selfish and immoral. It is your lack of virtue that transforms your demand into a moral right. A morality that holds need as a claim holds emptiness, non-existence, as its standard of value. It rewards an absence, a defect. Weakness, inability, incompetence, suffering, disease, disaster, the lack, the fault, the flaw, the zero. Who provides the account to pay these claims? Those who are cursed for being non-zeros, each to the extent of his distance from that ideal. Since all values are the product of virtues, the degree of your virtue is used as the measure of your penalty. The degree of your faults is used as the measure of your gain. Your code declares that the rational man must sacrifice himself to the irrational, the independent man to parasites, the honest man to the dishonest, the man of justice to the unjust, the productive man to thieving loafers, the man of integrity to compromising knaves, the man of self-esteem to sniveling neurotics. Do you wonder at the meanness of soul in those you see around you? The man who achieves these virtues will not accept your moral code. The man who accepts your moral code will not achieve these virtues. Under a morality of sacrifice, the first value you sacrifice is morality. The next is self-esteem. When need is the standard, every man is both victim and parasite. As a victim, he must labor to fill the needs of others, leaving himself in the position of a parasite whose needs must be filled by others. He cannot approach his fellow men except in one of two disgraceful roles. He is both a beggar and a sucker. You fear the man who has a dollar less than you. That dollar is rightfully his. He makes you feel like a moral defrauder. You hate the man who has a dollar more than you. That dollar is rightfully yours. He makes you feel that you are morally defrauded. The man below is a source of your guilt. The man above is a source of your frustration. You do not know what to surrender or demand, when to give and when to grab, what pleasure in life is rightfully yours and what debt is still unpaid to others. You struggle to evade as theory the knowledge that by the moral standard you've accepted, you are guilty every moment of your life. There is no mouthful of food you swallow that is not needed by someone somewhere on earth. And you give up the problem in blind resentment. You conclude that moral perfection is not to be achieved or desired, that you will muddle through by snatching as snatch can, and by avoiding the eyes of the young, of those who look at you as if self-esteem were possible, and they expected you to have it. Guilt is all that you retain within your soul, and so does every other man as he goes past, avoiding your eyes. Do you wonder why your morality has not achieved brotherhood on earth or the goodwill of man to man? The justification of sacrifice that your morality propounds is more corrupt than the corruption it purports to justify. The motive of your sacrifice, it tells you, should be love, the love you ought to feel for every man. A morality that professes the belief that the values of the spirit are more precious than matter, a morality that teaches you to scorn a whore who gives her body indiscriminately to all men, this same morality demands that you surrender your soul to promiscuous love for all comers. As there can be no causeless wealth, so there can be no causeless love or any sort of causeless emotion. An emotion is a response to a fact of reality, an estimate dictated by your standards. To love is to value. The man who tells you that it is possible to value without values, to love those whom you appraise as worthless, is the man who tells you that it is possible to grow rich by consuming without producing, and that paper money is as valuable as gold. Observe that he does not expect you to feel a causeless fear. When his kind get into power, they are expert at contriving means of terror, at giving you ample cause to feel the fear by which they desire to rule you. But when it comes to love, the highest of emotions, you permit them to shriek at you accusingly that you are a moral delinquent if you're incapable of feeling causeless love. When a man feels fear without reason, you call him to the attention of a psychiatrist. You are not so careful to protect the meaning, the nature, and the dignity of love. Love is the expression of one's values, the greatest reward you can earn for the moral qualities you have achieved in your character and person, the emotional price paid by one man for the joy he receives from the virtues of another. Your morality demands that you divorce your love from values and hand it down to any vagrant, not as response to his worth, but as response to his need, not as reward, but as alms, not as a payment for virtues, but as a blank check on vices. Your morality tells you that the purpose of love is to set you free of the bonds of morality, that love is superior to moral judgment, that true love transcends, forgives, and survives every manner of evil in its object. And the greater the love, the greater the depravity it permits to the loved. To love a man for his virtues is paltry and human, it tells you. To love him for his flaws is divine. To love those who are worthy of it is self-interest. To love the unworthy is sacrifice. You owe your love to those who don't deserve it, and the less they deserve it, the more love you owe them. The more loathsome the object, the nobler your love. The more unfastidious your love, the greater your virtue. And if you can bring your soul to the state of a dump heap that welcomes anything on equal terms, if you can cease to value moral values, you have achieved the state of moral perfection. Such is your morality of sacrifice, and such are the twin ideals it offers, to refashion the life of your body in the image of a human stockyards, and the life of your spirit in the image of a dump. Such was your goal, and you've reached it. Why do you now moan complaints about man's impotence and the futility of human aspirations? Because you were unable to prosper by seeking destruction? Because you were unable to find joy by worshipping pain? Because you were unable to live by holding death as your standard of value? The degree of your ability to live was the degree to which you broke your moral code. Yet you believe that those who preach it are friends of humanity. You damn yourself and dare not question their motives or their goals. Take a look at them now, when you face your last choice. And if you choose to perish, do so with full knowledge of how cheaply, how small an enemy has claimed your life. The mystics of both schools who preach the creed of sacrifice are germs that attack you through a single sore, your fear of relying on your mind. They tell you that they possess a means of knowledge higher than the mind, a mode of consciousness superior to reason, like a special pull with some bureaucrat of the universe who gives them secret tips withheld from others. The mystics of spirit declare that they possess an extra sense you lack. This special sixth sense consists of contradicting the whole of the knowledge of your five. The mystics of muscle do not bother to assert any claim to extrasensory perception. They merely declare that your senses are not valid, and that their wisdom consists of perceiving your blindness by some manner of unspecified means. Both kinds demand that you invalidate your own consciousness and surrender yourself into their power. They offer you as proof of their superior knowledge the fact that they assert the opposite of everything you know, and as proof of their superior ability to deal with existence, the fact that they lead you to misery, self-sacrifice, starvation, destruction. They claim that they perceive a mode of being superior to your existence on this earth. The mystics of spirit call it another dimension, which consists of denying dimensions. The mystics of muscle call it the future, which consists of denying the present. To exist is to possess identity. What identity are they able to give to their superior realm? They keep telling you what it is not, but never tell you what it is. All their identifications consist of negating. God is that which no human mind can know, they say, and proceed to demand that you consider it knowledge. God is non-man. Heaven is non-earth. Soul is non-body. Virtue is non-profit. A is non-A. Perception is non-sensory. Knowledge is non-reason. Their definitions are not acts of defining, but of wiping out